Now for the great British debate this hour. And I'm asking, are civil servants overstepping the mark? Staff at the ONS have voted to strike after being asked to return to the office for just 2 days a week. And that comes amid growing resistance from staff against government directives to increase office attendance, citing concerns about disruptions to personal arrangements and childcare responsibilities. Seriously, how did we manage before all this? Meanwhile, civil servants overseas arms exports to Israel have requested to cease work immediately over fears that they could be complicit in a war in crimes against Gaza. So for the great British debate this hour, I'm asking, are civil servants overstepping the mark? Well, joining me now to discuss, Peter Spencer, former Sky political correspondent, Stephen Barrett, barrister and writer, Peter Edwards, former editor of The Labour List, and Ibrahim Ibram, political commentator. Right, well, there's four. I counted four. I've just got three. I'm going to start with you, Stephen. Can you lay out the sort of guidelines and the rules here for civil servants? How does it work? Should they? I thought they had a code of conduct.
Well, it's not working, OK? So that's the most important thing to say, is that the constitutional arrangement we have with civil servants is not functioning the way it is supposed to function. And the reason it's not functioning the way it's supposed to function is because we've sort of forgot what the definition of being political is. And we've allowed them to do politics, provided it was, quote-unquote, good politics. Now, you actually can't have that. That's not a rule. That's not a law. Because who on earth is there to say what is good or bad politics? You know, that in itself is a political decision. So actually what you've done there is you've destroyed your rule. And once you've got rid of the definition of what is and isn't politics and let them do bits you like supporting people with my sexuality, you know, they're allowed to do that. They're allowed to do little bits of politics as long as they're deemed good politics, what I would call a nonsense law. Once you do that, you destroy impartiality, which means the civil service is no longer impartial. It is, in fact, politicised, but only politicised in a certain way. And anybody who thinks there's any control on this is mad. There is no boundary around that. The civil service, if you're allowing them to be a bit political, you know, there's no such thing as a bit pregnant, Nana. You know, they are either political or they are not. And they're being political. And once you do that, impartiality collapses. And so you get behaviour like this, which is, you know, and the most obvious one is Israel, which is completely ridiculous. I mean, there is a political belief in this country that Israel is committing breaches of international law, which is simply a delusion. I mean, that's I think there is no other way to put it. Israel is conducting an extremely difficult urban warfare. The United Nations says that whenever you conduct an urban warfare, generally, for every enemy combatant you kill, you accidentally kill 8 civilians. And we've done urban warfare. We have been involved in it. So we may very well have killed 8 civilians for every combatant. The Israelis are somehow managing to kill 5. So they're somehow managing to kill far fewer than anybody else has ever done. But there is, you know, people do not care about reason and fact, which is often true of the world of politics, I might add. What has happened is that impartiality has broken down and our civil service no longer functions in the way that constitutionally it is supposed to.
Right, thank you for that. Interesting stuff. Right, Peter Edwards, what's your thoughts?
So there's a dispute between the ONS, Office of National Statistics, and the PCS, which is not affiliated to Labour. I've been involved in industrial disputes, and often what's at the heart of them is really a breakdown of trust before you get onto the minutiae of the law. But clearly there's a difference between long-standing ONS staff who were there before the pandemic and those taken on since 2020 when we went into the first lockdown. I think a lot of it will depend on what's in the contract, but I do think, having been an employer and a boss myself, as well as someone who's managed, that employers have got to be flexible and you should do consultations when you're changing something. And I note that the PCS officer, quote, in a lot of papers, did actually say she felt the ONS had been heavy-handed. So although they're not here to speak, that would imply there hasn't really been enough consultation.
But and just for anyone, the PCS is the civil service union. So that's what it's talking about there. But Peter, what about the whole thing with Gaza then? Some of them preparing to withdraw their labour?
Well, I don't know the full details of that story, but clearly civil servants have a boss and they have a contract and they have to follow that. But there's also in all workplaces, really, and perhaps under law, there is some scope to act according to your conscience. But I'm not clear on the specific details of what they've been asked to do.
Reema Ibrahim, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, we've got to talk about public sector pay within the context of public sector spending. And remember that every increase in a public servant's or a civil servant's pay is indeed an increase in cost for the taxpayer. Now, the average salary for an ONS economist is about £31,000. It can go up, of course, with experience. And I think what's interesting about this is, you know, we can talk about the way in which we feel, you know, sorry for many people that haven't been able to actually look at those flexible working arrangements. Nana, you couldn't work from home if you wanted to. You're in the studio running a show. So I think it's really important that we have these conversations and actually thinking about where the money is coming from, but also why those people seem to feel the need to want to sort of bargain their way into having flexible working arrangements. The evidence around working from home is still pretty unclear. My question is, how did this all work before the pandemic?
Exactly. Well, it worked, didn't it? And they did what they were told, but somehow they're not doing that. Right, let's bring in Peter Spencer as well. Peter Spencer is here. Oh, Peter Spencer. Peter Spencer, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, there are... My thoughts are that there are two particular industrial disputes going on at present. One is over home working and the other is over minimum cover during a strike. In both cases, I can see the arguments on both sides. The bosses say, look, it's more efficient if people show their faces at the office now and then. And the workers say, look, you know, it's not what we signed up for on the minimum cover in the case of a strike. And the bosses say, look, for God's sake, there's certain times of stuff we've got to do, to which the workers say, yeah, this is an intrusion on our fundamental trade union rights. But far more importantly than this, I think, is the legal challenge over Rwanda. And here I have to say, I do think that Sir Humphrey's got a point, because of the fact that the government and Rishi Sunak just a couple of days ago have repeatedly hinted they are liable to put up two fingers to the European Court of Human Rights. And their advice is quite legal advice, is quite clear on this subject, which is the fact that they would then be breaking international law. And at this point, the civil servants are saying, yeah, look, the civil service, sort of the terms of service, so to speak, are we going to be complicit in breaking international law? Not if we can possibly help it.
But they're not really. Look, that is with the premise that they are breaking international law. And from what Stephen said, it doesn't sound like they are, right? So why do they think... Sorry, Stephen, am I right in saying that?
No, I think it's very important. For some reason, and I noticed several years ago, international law is all anybody ever talks about. But we are sovereign subjects of the United Kingdom. We are subject to UK law. We're subject to domestic law. We're not subject to international law. It doesn't control us. It's not in charge of us. It's not our boss. You know, it lives in the land of Narnia. And where the point is interesting is where we incorporate it into our domestic law, then it binds us. And the Human Rights Act has incorporated the ECHR. So if the ECHR found against Rwanda, then the civil servants would be right in saying we are bound by domestic law and we cannot break domestic law,
right,
and therefore we cannot help you on Rwanda. But it does require the ECHR to firstly make that ruling. They can't just guess that that is what the ECHR will do. And it also requires the United Kingdom to stay under the jurisdiction of the ECHR, which is our choice. We can leave. So, but it's important to get all the laws right and in order. And all I ever then do is make sure that they're applied consistently.
Interesting.
And civil servants who are going around saying, I can't do this because of international law, well, ignore them. They're obviously wrong. They're not bound by international law. That's nonsense.
They
can't do it for domestic law, that's different.
OK. Reem Ibrahim.
Yeah, so, I mean, I just wanted to add this point. You know, international law is effectively, you know, it's colloquial. We've got different laws through different supranational institutions, like, for example, with the ECHR, and we go through the European Court of Human Rights. But actually, in this country, we have an unwritten constitution, and law derives from Parliament. We have parliamentary sovereignty. And so all of this nonsense and this kind of... I do think it is a political move. I think it's political in terms of the way in which they are trying to prevent government law and government legislation from occurring or from being implemented specifically in the case of the Rwanda bill. Now, I actually don't think that the Rwanda policy is particularly going to be effective, but I think this is a political move.
OK. Right, so finally, then, I'll ask you all the question then. Do you think that... I'll start with you, Peter Spencer. Are they overstepping the mark? Yes or no?
No.
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 I won't ask you, Stephen, because I know you're not allowed to make a judgment. So I'll go to Reem. Are they overstepping the mark?
Yes, I do believe they are.
And Peter Edwards.
The Rwanda policy is morally wrong and civil servants have a right to act according to their conscience.
So are they stepping the mark then now, or with the things they're doing now? You don't think they are?
No, they're entitled to act according to their conscience.
Lovely. Thank you so much. Right, that's it. That's Peter Spencer, former Sky political correspondent. Thank you so much. Stephen Barrett, barrister and writer. Thank you. Peter Edwards, former editor of the Labour List, and Reen Ibrahim, political commentator. Thank you so much for your thoughts. Brilliant.